Well, good evening, and welcome to what I'm calling Power of Joy 2, focus on maturity and attachment. And yeah, I did change the title slightly because I'm starting with maturity and we'll do attachment week 7 and 8, though there'll be some attachment principles sprinkled all the way through. But we're glad you joined us. I'm Daryl Brazel. I'm pastor of New Hope Fellowship and director of New Hope Recovery Ministries in Lawrence. And I've had many of you in my Power of Joy classes, some of you in my Emmanuel Prayer Workshop, and so it's good to see familiar faces, and it's always good to reconnect, so I'm excited about being here. The material I'm going to start tonight, though, is new material. It actually is material that I sort of preached through a number of years ago. But it was, how would I say it? It was in the process of being birthed as I preached it. And it was one of those things that every single time I got done, I was like, there's so much more I could do with this. And I just didn't feel like I did it justice. So I'm real excited to be able to loop back now and to go through these concepts of maturity with a new audience, if that makes sense. Now, a few housekeeping things just to kind of set the stage for the next 8 weeks. And that is, first of all, and most of you have, you know, followed instructions, you know, my ladies and Zane and everybody who's helping organize, they do a great job of funneling you and getting you in the right places. But we would like for you to wear name tags each week, in part because each week at the end, we will break up into groups of three or four for some different sharing type activities. And if any of you are like me, having someone's name tag in front of you is just a lifesaver many times. So please get a name tag. They'll be on that back table each week. And I will also tell you that this week there are notes, the fill-in-the-blank notes that kind of help you keep up with me or help you refer back to it later in the week. And I will tell you right up front, I make no guarantees on those each week. This is my first time through this material, and so I will be very surprised if I'm not creating some PowerPoint slides at 6 o'clock on many Thursdays. So I will try to have notes, but if they're not there, sorry, they won't be there. Also, to let you know, there is a coffee machine out in the lobby. I don't know if that sign on it is pointing toward the need for donations or if it's out of order at the moment. But anyway, we are guests here at Colonial. Colonial is very graciously letting us use this space free of charge, and it's a wonderful gift for us to be able to gather here. So it would be, I would greatly appreciate it if you are a coffee drinker and you take of their generous offer out there. They do have a jar for donations over there. So if we could have a wash at least on that, that would be wonderful. Then also let you know that each week, starting next week, I will have CDs available of the previous week's audio teachings. And they will be available over here on the table, and the ladies will be able to help you with purchasing those. But then also with that, for those of you who want to wait, I would actually recommend waiting. And at the end of the class, I will put together a single CD with all the messages on MP3 files that you can put in your computer, put on iPads, iPhones, etc., etc. And some of you, they'll even play in your cars, depending upon your car's CD player. But I make no promises about that. So just know that that is an option, and you can actually go ahead and sign up for those and prepay for those. And if you do that, then I'll mail them to you as soon as we get them done at the end of the class. Another available resource I want to point you to is my Power of Joy class. The audio from that is now available on an MP3 CD, as I just explained. And I will tell you that this class, I'm trying to have it stand alone on itself, but I will tell you that much of the foundation for this class on maturity and attachment has been laid in my previous Power of Joy class. So if I could just have a quick show of hands, help me remember, because I'm not sure which of you were at workshop and which of you are at Power of Joy. How many of you have been in my Power of Joy class? Wow, okay, two-thirds are better. That's wonderful. Okay, so what I'll tell you right up front about tonight is that tonight is going to be a one-week overview of Power of Joy. For those who are brand new starting out, Now, for those of you who've been in Power of Joy once or even twice, I think it will still be worthwhile because it was worthwhile for me just going back over these things and deciding which was most pertinent for where we're going over the next 8 weeks. And so we're going to kind of set the stage this morning by looking at what it means to live in joy and then how that sets the stage for growing our maturity and healing some of our attachment wounds. And then one last unfortunate reality that we have to deal with is the very good possibility of bad weather nights. As you know, if tomorrow night's storm would have been 24 hours earlier, we might have been in trouble tonight. So what I want to let you know is that if there is bad weather, go to either the POJKC Facebook page or POJKC.com. And that's, of course, short for Power of Joy Kansas City. And on those two websites, if we are going to cancel, I will put that front and center on those two pages as soon as we make that decision. If you can't get on the web, whatever, you're welcome to call or send me a text, and I'll try my best to reply to that as well. And we may try to send out emails if we can get the list together, if that makes sense. Let's see, I did forget to mention, just asking you to please, if you've registered online, thank you. That really helps. But if you haven't already, just check in with Wendy and Harriet sometime tonight, just to make sure if your name's on the list, we got your registration. And we probably did, but this is a new system for us, so please help us out by making sure you're on the list. If you haven't registered, let me ask you to please register, just from the standpoint of then it'll give us the opportunity to let you know of different things that we're doing in the Joy and Thrive community in the area. And then also with that, just a reminder for those of you who haven't been around here, we do have a suggested donation, but if you know somebody who is not here because they were all reluctant about what, a quote cost, please let them know that we would love for them to join us regardless. One of the commitments we've kind of made in our ministry is God's released us to offer what we do as just an offering. And we certainly appreciate, and any donations that we receive help us continue to do that. But the good part about that, too, is since we don't charge for these events, anything you do donate is a donation and therefore tax deductible. So please, if you know of anyone that isn't here because of that, please let them know. We don't keep up with it in the first place, and so we are glad to have them here regardless. All right. Well, that's the housekeeping stuff. And so where we want to begin tonight is where I like to begin always, and that is with appreciation. Now, appreciation is a very powerful thing that, guess what? It is now kind of the big buzzword in even secular neuroscience self-help world. Even those who don't believe in God, don't believe in Scripture, but study the brain, study the body, etc., one of the things they're discovering is that focusing on something you appreciate is one of the fastest, best ways to reset the brain, let the body and the nerves settle down, and to be able to function much better in life. So I'll be real honest with you. I do appreciation before I teach or preach for very selfish reasons, because it makes you think I'm a better teacher. Because if your brain's turned on, then you're going to pick up more of what I say, and it's going to make a lot more sense to you. Now, I also do this because as I do appreciation, it really does make me a better teacher, because my brain gets better as well. And so the way this appreciation process works, the way we've kind of developed it, whatever, is that it begins just with a simple prayer. And that is you ask Jesus to remind you of something you can appreciate. Now, I know in an audience of this size, that we have probably almost every theological representation here. And so we probably have people all the way on this extreme that grew up like I did, being taught that, you know, God got the Bible written and at that point he pretty much just left and is just a silent observer. To people who think that God, you know, directs every point, every movement, even what parking space they got into. We got that whole continuum in this room. But here's what I want you to think about. If God can do anything in our world, how hard would it be for him to bring to my memory something I've experienced in the past? So in the difficulty realm, from raising Lazarus from the dead or parting the Red Sea to the easy end of the spectrum, don't you think reminding us of something we appreciate, if God can do anything in our world, guess what? I think he can do that. Now, why is Daryl making such a big point about that? Well, simply because when people first begin doing this, what I hear from them all the time is, well, I asked Jesus to remind me of something and something came to my mind, but I think I must be making it up. Well, just think that through for a minute. You ask God to remind you and something you hadn't thought of in years comes to your mind. Let me just encourage you, if that happens for you, give it a chance that maybe, just possibly, it's God answering the prayer you just offered. So ask him to remind you of something that you could appreciate, and then just have a little conversation with him. Talk to him out loud, talk to him silently in your head, whatever you're comfortable with. Just talk to him about whatever he reminded you of. And it could be anything. It could be something spiritual, like a time of deep connection with him. It could be something as simple as that piece of cherry pie you had last night that was just so good. Anything that you can appreciate that he reminds you of will help you focus and help your brain stabilize. So you just take a couple minutes or a minute or so to talk to him about what comes to your mind. And as you're doing that, try to pay attention and notice what's happening in your body. Notice your muscles begin to relax. Notice your breathing slowing down. Just try to be mindful of what's going on in your interior world and even in the physical world of your body. And then the next step is to give your appreciation a name. A one, two, or three word name. Because what the name does is it's like putting a hook on the wall, or, you know, like on a climbing wall, how they have those places to grab hold of. That once you name an appreciation, you take ownership of it. And not only do you take ownership of it, but it gives you something solid to grab hold of when you're slipping. So giving it a name is a real helpful thing. And then the last step of it that we'll do here tonight is I'm going to ask you to share your appreciation with someone new, someone you've just met, someone maybe behind you that you haven't met yet, as a way of kind of getting us started in some joy. So let me just pray for us, and then I'll ask you to join in this prayer exercise. So Jesus, we just thank you for this opportunity to come and to be together and to glean some insights from your word and from science and from life that others have learned, and that we're going to find ways to look at in new and I think very significant ways. And so, Lord, as we come together in this time, I just ask right now that you would remind each and every one of us of something we could appreciate. Remind us of a time of connection with you, or a relationship, a friendship, something from nature. Just anything that will help us to remember how good your heart is toward us. So now just ask Jesus personally, Jesus, please remind me of something I can appreciate. Now whatever you've been talking to him about, give it a name and find someone around you to share that with. We'll take just a couple minutes to share some joy stories. All right, so what was that like for you as you focused on something you could appreciate, but then especially as you shared your appreciation with someone. What happened for you? Just give me a couple words of what that felt like, what the experience like was for you.
Welcoming.
Excited for me. They got excited for you. Okay. Happy. All right. How many of you started feeling more appreciation when the other person was telling their appreciation story? You see, one of the things is that appreciation is contagious. And it is a gift. It is, as Jim Wilder calls it, is a gift of hospitality. That when we share our appreciation stories with others, we create a space that is welcoming for them. In fact, one of the things I'll tell you is that for those of you who don't know, I work with in the realm of helping especially men who are wrestling with pornography and sexual addictions. And so as I'm sure you can understand, that the marriage relationship in that situation is often a real struggle. And for many of our couples, early in the process especially, there's almost nothing they can talk about without it turning into a fight. Except, you know what one of the best beginning places has been for them? Is to share their appreciations with one another. I tell my guys all the time, share your appreciation with your wife daily, and see what a difference that makes. Because what it does is it just creates a space where we can be with one another in a really good way. And so just a heads up, we will begin each week of this maturity class doing appreciation. But tonight, what I want to do, as I said before, we're going to kind of take a real quick run through the Power of Joy material just to set the stage for the weeks to come on maturity and attachment. And so where I want to begin, first of all, is with the definition of how we're going to define joy here in the context of this Power of Joy materials. And we define joy as being with someone who is glad as glad can be to be with me. You know, it's always fun when we start one of these classes, especially if these have gone on for a while, is people walk in the room and you can see faces light up as they see people they haven't seen in a long time. And what that is that's joy being shared. And what it is it's something that's happening deep in the right side of our brain. And what you need to understand is that whenever I see someone that I'm glad to be with, someone that I like, my brain releases a little bit of dopamine. And if you haven't heard of dopamine before, you've not been listening a lot, because dopamine is the big buzzword about addiction and about a lot of things. But guess what? Dopamine is not a bad thing. Dopamine is a wonderful thing, because it's the chemical that's released in our brain that feels really good. You get a dopamine hit when you eat a piece of chocolate. You get a dopamine hit when you do something pleasurable, etc. But joy, being in the presence of someone who's glad as glad can be with you, to be with you, releases dopamine also. But what differentiates joy from pleasure is that joy is always relationally connected. Okay, what I mean by that is, you know, I could pull out my smartphone and pull up a game or even a text or something like that, and just that activity would start releasing some dopamine in my brain. But guess what that dopamine is lacking? It's lacking the relational connection. It's lacking other chemicals in the brain, such as oxytocin, that happens when we are relationally connected with one another. And so the analogy that I've been using to differentiate these things is, think of carbohydrates versus protein. Pleasure is carbohydrates. Joy is protein. Now, think of it this way. You can live on carbohydrates, but what do you have to do? You have to keep on them all the time. For example, you know, one of my guilty pleasures in life is, you know, Captain Crunch. I know it's horrible for you. It really is not breakfast, it's dessert, but every once in a while I'll give in and get a box. Now, if I eat a bowl of Captain Crunch, no matter how big the bowl is, at 7 o'clock in the morning, what happens to me about 9 or 9:30? I crash. And so at that point, guess what I got to do? I got to eat more. I got to get more carbs. I got to get something in me to keep going. Okay? The reality is you can live on carbs that way, but it's like being on a gerbil wheel that you're just constantly spinning in. At the same time, if I eat a bacon and eggs protein breakfast at 7 o'clock in the morning, what's happening for me at 9:30? 10, 11. Protein lasts. Okay? There is nothing inherently wrong in pleasure. Pleasure is a good thing. It is a God-created thing. But when people try to live their lives fueled on pleasure instead of joy, guess what they end up having to do? They have to stay on that gerbil wheel of constantly being stimulated, constantly getting dopamine hit after dopamine hit after dopamine hit, until guess what happens? They become dopamine numb. And it takes more and more and more and more, and they become less and less satisfied in life. And so joy is such a foundational, critical principle of life that it's where we must begin. Now, it's also helpful to note that the transmission of joy happens nonverbal. You know, if I tell you, you know, I'm really glad to be with you, with a scowl on my face and an angry voice tone, what are you going to believe? You're going to believe the nonverbals over the words. You see, joy is always authentic. You can't fake joy. Even if you say, I'm glad to be with you, if you're not glad to be with them, your nonverbals are going to give you away. And on the flip side of that, if you're glad to be with someone, you know, saying it might help in some respects, but it's entirely unnecessary. Because if you're genuinely glad to be with someone, the right side of your brain is going to communicate to their right side of their brain. And this happens in a process. Part of why it's always authentic is it happens at the rate of 6 complete back and forth cycles every second. It takes 1/3 of a second for me to be consciously aware you walked into the room. And in 1/6 of a second, we've already swapped 2 back and forth joy or not joy relational connections. That's why it can't be faked. And it's probably best illustrated an interaction with a small child. And this is always one of the really cool things is you can go out and experiment with this week. If you have a grandchild, or if you have a child of your own, or if there is a baby in the grocery cart in front of you in a grocery store, you can try this out. Because what happens is, you know, babies just make us all smile, don't they? It's really hard to look at a small baby, especially once they get to that stage where their eyes are lighting up and they're smiling and everything. It's really hard to look at one of them and be grumpy. So if you look at a child and you have joy well up in you, here's what happens. Is your brain releases a little dopamine in your brain because you feel joy. And it nonverbally sends that joy to the baby, and that baby's brain releases a little dopamine, and they like it, and it feels good, so they smile a little back at you, and they send back joy, and that releases more dopamine in your brain, and it goes back and forth and amplifies with every exchange. And then guess what the child will do? When they've reached their maximum joy that they're able to bring in, because remember, their brains are just developing, the child will always look down and away. And guess what they're saying by that? I need to rest. And then guess what they'll do after resting a few seconds, maybe a minute or so? They'll look back up, they'll smile, okay, I'm ready for more. And what's real critical to understand here is it's the adult's job to synchronize to the child. Don't be that grandparent who's poking them when they're looking away. No, I'm over here, I'm over here. Let them rest. Their brains are maxed out. Just give them a little bit. They'll come back. Because, and I think Jim Wilder says it's 9 months of age, a baby will want to do up to 8 hours a day of nothing but joy smiles. It's why the best moms get very little done. And that's the most important thing they can do. In fact, parents, grandparents, the most important thing you can do for a small child is just enjoy them. Boy, I wish I'd have known that when my kids were born. And this rhythm of joy, look away, we call it the rhythm of joy and quiet. Joy, rest, and repeated experiences, the rhythm of joy and quiet, what it does is it actually stimulates growth in the prefrontal cortex. As Ed Curry says, it's like Miracle-Gro for the brain. We're born as infants with a void in our prefrontal cortex. And this rhythm of joy and quiet stimulates the brain chemistry such that our prefrontal cortex grows. And guess what our prefrontal cortex does? Well, pretty much everything that is the symptom of ADHD. The prefrontal cortex, a well-grown prefrontal cortex, will be able to function so much better in life. It's a critical aspect of brain development. And moving into our material especially, repeated experiences of the rhythm of joy and quiet grows a concept that we call our joy capacity. And joy capacity is a critical element that we're going to talk about a lot, off and on, mixed in with both the maturity and the attachment material. So think of it this way. Every cycle of joy and quiet is like another drop of water into a bucket. And eventually, drop after drop after drop after drop begins to become a measurable quantity. And this measurable quantity is what we call joy capacity. And joy capacity is what enables us to suffer well. Okay? Think of it this way. The more joy that is poured into us, the higher our joy capacity will be. The way I like to explain it is think in terms of a 5-gallon bucket filled with joy. So imagine you grew up with parents, grandparents, and others in your community who delighted in you, who practiced the rhythm of joy and quiet with you over and over and over and over again, day after day after day, week after week, year after year. Guess what? You would have a full bucket and a high joy capacity. Now, why is that important? It's important because when joy is greater than pain, I can be myself. The reality, and I don't need to elaborate on this because we've all experienced it, but pain hurts. And we all hurt. We don't like it, but when our joy bucket is full, guess what? We can remember who we are and act like ourselves. However, when my pain is greater than my joy, I go to what we call trauma. And that means I lose connection with the higher and better parts of my brain and respond by going into survival mode. And in survival mode, we stop acting human and start acting like T-Rex. Evolutionary neuroscientists call the lower portion of our brain the reptilian brain because reptiles only have the lower portion. And so a number of years ago, Ed Kahuri made this comparison at a Thrive conference, and I've loved it. Because what he says is that when we go to trauma, we lose access to the best parts of our brain, and we become like T-Rex. Well, guess what mattered to T-Rex? Three things. Eating, not being eaten, and sex. So, how do we stay ourselves? How do we stay human? How do we not be like T-Rex where we go in survival mode and run people over? Well, think about Jesus for a moment. Did he suffer great pain? emotionally, physically, in all ways? Absolutely. But question, did he ever go to trauma? Did he ever stop acting like himself? Absolutely not. Even in the most painful places, even during his time of crucifixion, guess what he did? He acted like himself. On the cross, he prayed for the forgiveness of his executioners. He took care of his mother. He stayed true to his mission in spite of having the power to end his pain. Well, the question we must ask there is, how? How in the world did he do that? Well, I believe the answer is found in Hebrews 12:2, where the writer says, "Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God." I believe that Jesus was able to be himself, even in excruciating pain, because his joy capacity was to the rim. His joy capacity, his joy bucket, was greater than his pain, even though his pain was greater than any pain you and I will ever face. Well, question, how was his joy capacity so high? I believe because of his intimate, constant relationship with God the Father, God the Holy Spirit, and the people with whom he did life. So let's go back to our bucket analogy. How can we learn to suffer well like Jesus? Well, first of all, we must recognize that suffering well requires high levels of joy. We all face painful things in our lives. No one gets through life in a fallen world without heartache. Therefore, you and I need full buckets of joy to be ourselves. But one inherent problem with that is that none of us started out with full buckets. The amount of joy in our bucket initially depended upon how well equipped our parents, family, and community were able to pour into us. And so the reality is that many of us started out with very low levels of joy, which means it didn't take much to push us over the edge into trauma. You know, when I explained that picture of if your community and your parents were able to do the rhythm of joy and quiet with you over and over and over, what I always sense from people is that brings up a little bit of heartache. Because we know that as much as our parents loved us, they weren't able to do that. Mom was codependent. Mom was depressed. Dad was addicted to this. Dad was angry. Yada, yada, yada. We all have those kind of experiences. And so because of that, we all come into life, into especially our adult lives, with different levels of joy. And that helps us understand why the two people can experience the same painful event and one person go to complete PTSD and the other person be okay. Classic example Dr. Carl Lehman gives is imagine two soldiers walking side by side in combat as their buddy in front of them steps on a landmine and gets blown to smithereens. One soldier goes total PTSD and can't function. The other one, it was a horrible event. He hates it. It was a painful memory, but he's able to press on and be himself. What's the difference? One had 4 gallons of joy. The other one only had one. And the pain was a 3-gallon pain. Okay? So that brings us to the next reality. Not only do we all start with different levels of joy capacity, but all our buckets leak. We all have holes in our joy buckets. Well, where do those holes come from? They come from any time we experienced pain and trauma. Every time our pain exceeded our joy, the pressure of the pain blew a new hole in our bucket. For example, if as a child your father's anger overwhelmed you, that pressure blew a hole. If your grandmother, who was a primary source of joy for you, who delighted in you when everyone else was too busy, passed away suddenly, guess what? Another hole appeared. If you were physically, emotionally, or sexually abused, your abusers blew holes in your bucket. And the greater the trauma, the larger the hole. The larger and more numerous the holes, the faster your capacity drains out. So can you see the effect? Can you see the impact? Can you see why life is so difficult and addiction so common? Why, especially in America, we use addictions of all kinds to help us to go to numb and medicate our pain. It's why Pink Floyd's song, Comfortably Numb, resonated with so many. We also use things like codependency, intimacy anorexia, or food anorexia to maintain the illusion of control of ourselves and others. Many try to stay so busy that they don't have time to feel the pain inside. But no one can run faster than the pain. So if you start out with a low joy level to begin with, and then experience painful things that cause what little joy you have to leak out, then guess what? Any painful event can push you over to trauma. And in trauma, you end up doing whatever you believe you have to in order to survive. You become a devourer, a manipulator, a person who does whatever he or she thinks is required to survive. You become T-Rex, only concerned about eating, not being eaten, and sex. Okay, well, that gives us a somewhat depressing picture of the problem, but we're not going to stay there. Because what we're going to talk about in Power of Joy and in this maturity and attachment class is a three-pronged approach to doing what I call joy-based recovery. Now, think about a three-legged stool for a moment. On a three-legged stool, which stool is most important? On a three-legged stool, which leg is most important? That'll make better sense. They're all equally important. Because if any of those three legs is cracked or broken, you're going to end up on your back or other portions of our body. So all three legs are critically important. And so that's why I've used this analogy, because I think there's three critical legs of our recovery. And I think oftentimes we focus on one or two legs to the neglect of a third. And when we do that, we don't get very far. Now, the first leg of joy-based recovery is what I call maximize joy input. So, for example, if you take a leaking bucket and put it under a water source, guess what? Even though it leaks, it stays full. Okay, we have seen this principle play out over and over in our recovery groups. We've had individuals come to us and attend 2-3 groups a week, make phone calls every day, get with other people for coffee and lunch, etc. And as they're connected in joy, guess what? They start acting more like themselves. And as long as they're in that place of constantly being refilled, they're not losing sobriety. They're not acting out. They're not going to those places of trauma. Because putting yourself in a community and context where you are constantly receiving joy is often the critical first step or first leg of real recovery. But then the second leg that I want us to look at is allowing Jesus to plug our holes. I mean, think about it. Doesn't it make sense if your bucket leaks to plug the holes? I mean, let's be honest. It's really difficult to attend 3 or more groups a week. Life happens. Kids have soccer games, concerts, recitals, etc. You can't go to a recovery group every night of the week for the rest of your life. Though in many circles, that seems to be the only solution. So allowing Jesus to meet you in your wounded places only makes sense. Now, understand, I believe that there are different ways people throughout the ages have gone about inviting Jesus into their wounded places. And I believe that any time Jesus meets you in a wounded place, he doesn't just put, you know, a temporary patch on your hole. He welds it closed in a way that is permanent. And there are different ways that people have learned to do that since the very beginning of the first century. But a way that has been extremely helpful in our ministry, and a way that we have found most effective, is what we call the Emmanuel prayer process. And the core of the Emmanuel process is the reality that Jesus is always with us. Unfortunately, our problem is that most of our lives, we are like the disciples on the road to Emmaus. And what I mean by that is that we have Jesus right beside us, and like the disciples on the road to Emmaus, we're completely oblivious that it's him. You know, Jesus' last promise to us was, "And I am with you always to the end of the age." I am with you always. And there's other passages in Scripture that speak of God's abiding presence with us. The problem is never that God has left us. The problem is that we've lost our perception of his presence. And so the Emmanuel process at its core is simply the process of asking Jesus to help us remove whatever is in the way and to perceive his presence in any and every circumstance. And in our wounded places, that is especially powerful, because when we allow Jesus to meet us in those wounded places, he puts his hand over the hole. And when his hand is removed, there is no hole. And that is a powerful thing. And so tonight and in weeks to come, we're going to do Emmanuel process journaling in a way to help us to get a taste of what's available. But here's a point I want to emphasize. Jesus' heart is to heal our wounds. Ever heard the phrase, "By his wounds we are healed"? He wants to meet us in our hurted and wounded places, and when he does, our ability to retain our joy and stay out of trauma increases drastically because we stop leaking so much. And I know in my own journey, the places where I have experienced his healing have been life-changing. I would not be here standing in front of you tonight with 17 years of freedom from an addiction to pornography and sexual issues without Jesus plugging many of my holes. However, it's critical that you heard one word I said. Many. Not all. You see, I believe that I could spend every afternoon for 10 years on Dr. Carl Lehman's couch getting Emmanuel prayer. And I would experience an incredible amount of healing. And guess what? I would still leak. Because our wounds are many. Our wounds are too numerous to count. Now, some will say, well, then what's the point? Everything is the point. Because what I will tell you is that while I stand before you as a leaking vessel, I leak a whole lot less today than I did 17 years ago. And I pray that 17 years from now, I leak a whole lot less than I leak today. And every wound, every place that I allow Jesus to meet me in, plugs one of those holes, allows me to hold my joy capacity, allows me to suffer well in greater circumstances, and allows me to grow in my maturity. You see, I believe that recovery is a synonym for sanctification. After all, think about it. What are we recovering from? we are attempting to recover the heart that Jesus gave us. But until we see Jesus face to face, until we experience His complete healing, we will all continue to leak on some level. And that is why we will always need community. That's why we need constant refilling, refreshing of our buckets. It's why it's impossible to live the lives God calls us to live in isolation. We need joy from God and one another to replenish whatever we are leaking. And so that brings us to the third leg of this joy-based recovery. And that's the leg of what I call maturity. That we must grow our maturity. Now, one of the especially helpful resources we have used for many years is the Life Model by Dr. Jim Wilder, Mary Beth Poole, and others. And in the Life Model, they describe five stages of maturity: the infant, the child, the adult, the parent, and the elder. And each stage of maturity, the Life Model presents both our needs, what we must receive from our parents and our community, as well as the tasks we must learn in order to progress to the next stage of maturity. Now, the sad reality is that in our culture and our world, most adults by age never make it past child-level maturity because they don't learn to accomplish and master the tasks. Okay, let me give you one simple example of that. One of the critical tasks of childhood that they've identified is learning what satisfies. Well, guess what? When has something you are addicted to ever satisfied you? The answer is never. Alcohol, drugs, sugar, pornography, or anything else we use to medicate always leaves us wanting something more, something different, and or simply disgusted by what we have done. They never satisfy. But guess what? We keep going back to them. Now, how much sense does that make? We go back to them looking for them to satisfy, even though they've never satisfied before. Why? Because we haven't learned that late in childhood task of how to understand what really satisfies me and to focus there. And so instead, we get on that gerbil wheel and we go round and round and round. Well, guess what happens when we don't learn that task? Guess what happens when we don't grow our maturity? Well, our lack of maturity blows new holes in our buckets. Okay, think of it this way. What happens to a man's joy level when he caves into his cravings, indulges in porn, and gets caught by his wife? Well, guess what? It blows a hole in both their buckets. And guess what? I will say it blows that hole whether she ever finds out or not. Because even if she doesn't find out, guess what it does? It destroys their intimacy because now he's hiding from her. He's pretending to be someone that he's not. And as a result, that lack of real intimate connection, because you can't be intimate with someone who's hiding, blows new holes in the bucket. And so one of the real critical reasons we need to look at our maturity is because how we so often sabotage ourselves. Have you noticed how often in life you do things that you've done before that you know aren't helpful, and they sabotage a relationship, or they sabotage what the next step you're trying to make to move forward? That's why we have to focus on the tasks of our maturity. So how do we grow maturity? How do you learn what satisfies? How do you learn, or another task that we'll talk about in a few weeks, is the task of learning to ask for what you need. How do you learn to take care of yourself and others? How? You have to do the work. You have to ask the Father to show you where your maturity is lacking and ask Him to show you what He wants you to do to grow those skills. And so if you want to know more about growing your maturity, let me point you to the Life Model and also Jim's red book, Living with Men. And then just let me encourage you to come back next week and the week after and the week after as we'll spend time wrestling with that. But at the core, what it means is I believe it means to do the work of recovery. You see, I believe that God does His work of healing, but I believe He calls us to step into partnership with Him by doing our work of growing our maturity. And this is where many miss the boat. They experience God's healing, they experience His power and love in their lives, but they don't do the work of growing up, and so they end up continuing to repeat their destructive patterns and cycles and continue to blow new holes in the bucket that cause more leaking than their healing is stopping. And so next week, we're going to dive into infant-level needs and tasks. But to set the stage, I want to go ahead and give us a few foundational principles for you to chew on for next week. And so the first foundational principle of growing our maturity that I want you to notice is that maturity and value are not the same. Think of it this way. When do we see the value of someone more clearly than when they are a baby? Okay, for my entire 20, I don't remember how, I can't, I don't, I lost track of the number of years of ministry now. 25 plus something. Brain's not working that well there right at the moment. But my whole time in ministry, one of my favorite things to do is when there's a new baby in the church. Because one of my traditions, and traditions in each church I've worked with, is I have the couple bring the baby up in front of the church, and they hand the baby to me, and I hold the baby up in front of the congregation, and guess what? When I have that baby's hand, that baby in my hands, I have 100% attention of every single one in the building. From the little toddler all the way up to grandpa that we're not sure knows what's going on. Everybody is so focused in my direction. Why? Because whenever we see an infant, we see incredible value. Now, I will pretty well guarantee you that when we start talking about these tasks and you see your holes that we'll talk about in a minute, the enemy is going to be right there poking you with his stick of condemnation, telling you that you're just a lousy, pitiful little infant. Don't by his lies. Romans 8:1 says, there is therefore now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. If you're an infant in some area, you need to know that God looks and smiles on you just like each one of us smiles when we see an infant. Especially if that infant happens to be ours or our grandchild or someone we're closely connected to. Even in your infant-level maturity places, God delights and values you more than you can imagine. And then a second principle we need to understand is that maturity is often like Swiss cheese. Now, what in the world do you mean by that? Well, think of a stack of Swiss cheese. A stack of Swiss cheese may be 6 inches high, but guess what? It may have some holes that go all the way to the bottom. Okay? Same thing's true with my maturity. If you could look at and measure my maturity from a distance, you will likely see that it stacks up to a level of parent maturity. Most of the time, in most areas of my life, I function at that level. However, like Swiss cheese, there are some holes in specific places of my maturity. And some of those holes go all the way down to an infant level. And so I may be going along and functioning very well in life, and then something triggers me or I hit a painful place. And guess what? I sometimes respond with much less maturity than I like Because the holes in my maturity take me back to very young places. But those holes do not define my total maturity. But then third, I want you to see that each stage of maturity has both needs and tasks. And it's helpful for us to see how those needs and tasks are intricately connected. Okay? So what that means is that if the adults in your world did a poor job of meeting your needs, guess what the likelihood was of you learning to accomplish the tasks? Slim to none. Okay, for example, think of the childhood task of learning to ask for what you need. What happens if you grew up in a home, a family, where asking for what you need might get your head bit off? Or what happens if you grow up in a home and a family where you could ask for what you needed till you were blue in the face and nobody ever really heard it? Well, you learned that asking for what you need didn't work. So you found other ways to get your needs met. You learned a false independence. You learned a quasi-counterfeit maturity that looks like you're accomplishing things, but it's really always working around rather than through. And so we become master manipulators. And we don't ask for what we need, but we get it by hook, crook, or force. Our needs and our tasks are intricately connected. But then the next thing I want you to know is a foundational principle, and here's where the good news begins, is we can ask the Father to provide for the needs we have missed. We can ask the Father to provide what we have missed. This was a real eye-opener for me when I first read the Life Model material. Now, I will tell you that myself, and most when we first start recognizing this, it really kind of makes us angry. Because especially when you recognize infant-level needs that were missed for you, then it's a real easy place to go, well, there's nobody that can meet those for me now. And in some senses, that's true, except for the fact that we have a God who, guess what one of the ways that he's constantly refers to himself by? Father. And God wants to meet those places for us. And he also wants to bring other people in our life who cannot replace mom and dad, but who can meet some of those holes. And so we can proactively ask the Father to provide for the needs that we have missed. And we'll spend more time talking about that in weeks to come. But the next what I want us to see is that we can also grow our maturity by learning the tasks we have missed. Over the next several weeks, as I talk about these specific tasks and you start identifying the holes in your maturity, then you can start saying, okay, so I never learned how to ask for what I need. Okay, so that's probably a pretty good clue that I need to work on that. And maybe it's an act of repentance for me tomorrow to ask my wife for what I need rather than just hope that she figures it out and does it for me. Or maybe I could ask my coworker X, Y, or Z. Or maybe I can, and as you start stepping into those after you've identified them, you can be amazed at what kind of transformations start happening. And that is going to be our primary focus for the next 5 weeks. We are going to try to identify tasks we have failed to learn, and then we're going to go to the gym and start working out. And we're going to start growing those muscles by learning those tasks. But here's the last critical point I'm going to give you tonight. And that is that we must start where we are at and not where we want to be. And I know, for those of you looking at the notes, I've messed with you now because this is something I've added since I did those notes. But I think it's real important. I'll give you a great example of that. My freshman year in high school, I was 5'10" and I weighed 118 pounds. Yes, that means beanpole. And I wanted to play defensive tackle. So you know what I did the next 4 years? Primarily two things. I lifted weights and I ate my parents out of house and home. And so by my senior in high school, I was 6'1" and 225 playing defensive tackle. But think of this, though. What would have happened my freshman year if I had said, if I had gone over to where the senior linemen were and joined them in their workout? If I had plopped down at the bench press and tried to lift the 250 pounds they were lifting, guess what? It would have crushed me because I was a freshman and they wouldn't have helped me. And guess what? I remember as a freshman being quite intimidated and not wanting the older people to see how little I was lifting. But guess what? If I would have let that keep me from a focus of working on where I was at, I would have stayed there. And I think this is one of our biggest struggles with working on our maturity. That our shame, our embarrassment over where we're at causes us to try to hide it rather than start with the 5 pound weight. But guess what? Starting with the 5 pound weight, if that's where you're at, that's a great accomplishment. And so I'm going to tell you right up front, I'm going to say some things in the coming weeks that are going to hurt and that the enemy is going to try to twist and use as condemnation. But I promise you, they are not intended for that. They are simply trying to help us to honestly see where we're at and to see what we need to work on next. And if you will embrace that and let Jesus start with you right where you're at, I promise you, He has great places He wants to take you. And so with that in mind, next week we will dive into infant level needs and tasks. And so in weeks 2 through 6, we'll go through infant, child, adult, parent, and elder level maturity. And then in week 7 and 8, we'll deal with our attachment styles and how those impact our relationships and how we can begin allowing God to bring healing in those places also. But where I wanted to end tonight is with some material from the Joyful Journeys book called Interactive Appreciation. And I'm very thankful that a large portion of you have been in my Power of Joy class, because I do not have time to do any justice to teaching on this tonight. But one thing I've learned about this is, if you trust me a little bit, you don't need me to teach you. And what I mean by that is, if you will just give it a shot tonight and write whatever comes to your mind as you read those things and try to not filter yourself at all, I promise you, you will have a very good likelihood of hearing something really cool from Jesus. And so what we're doing with the interactive appreciation is similar to how we began tonight in appreciation, is you're going to ask Jesus to remind you of anything that you can appreciate. And then you're just going to write anything that comes to your mind. And then after you've written what comes to your mind about appreciation, then I want you to write a thank you to Him. Jesus, thank you for reminding me of that sunrise I saw a few weeks ago. Yada, yada. Now, here's where it gets a little challenging for people. Because the next step is to write a response from Jesus about your appreciation. To ask Him, Jesus, so what do you think about my appreciation? And write whatever comes to your mind. Now, what's challenging about that is people say, well, I don't want to put words in Jesus' mouth. Okay, I know. You're not writing the next book of the Bible. You're doing an interactive reflection with Jesus. And so here's where I'm just going to ask you to trust me and just try it. And then the last thing we'll do is we will read these aloud for those who are comfortable and willing to do that. We're going to be pressed on time, but we'll do it. We're going to read these to one another. So, because what happens is when you read it aloud, that's when it often really sinks in. So let me just pray for you, and we'll spend the next couple minutes just reflecting with Jesus. So Jesus, we just ask right now that you would remind each person here of something they can appreciate. Remind them of a connection with you, or something of nature, or something of a relationship. Just remind them of something they can appreciate. And now ask Jesus personally, and just write anything that comes to your mind. All right, and now this instruction, and please let me qualify this a little bit, 100% voluntary. If you're not comfortable reading yours, that's perfectly okay. But let me encourage you for the next few minutes to turn and try to get in, you know, just kind of turn in your seats with another person or maybe two or three of you together. And if anyone is willing, just to read their appreciation, or just read what they wrote to the other person or the other people in their group. And the reason this is real important is I can't tell you how many times I've done this, and when I wrote it, I didn't think it was very significant. And then when I spoke it aloud, wow. So let's take just a few minutes, about the next 5 minutes, and then we'll come back and wrap it up. So just turn where you are and find someone that you can share with. All right, here I go being the joy teacher killing joy, but I do make a commitment to getting us out of here on time each week. And so let me just wrap it up real quickly. As usual, I probably had about 3 too many slides. Try to cover, there's always just a little bit more you got to squeeze in. So anyway, thank you for being here tonight. And next week we will dive into infant level needs and tasks. And I think you will have a lot of light bulbs going off inside, a lot of understandings of, oh, that's why I struggle here. That's why I hurt here. Oh, here's a place I can work on. So let me encourage you to come back next week. And then just a quick reminder on some of the housekeeping things. As I said, if you haven't registered, please check with Wendy or Harriet and get registered. Or if you slipped in and didn't check in, check in with them just so we can see that your registration, your online registration worked. And then materials are available over here, and you're welcome to take advantage of those over the next 7 weeks moving forward. And I'm really excited about teaching this material, and I look forward to spending the next 7 weeks with you. Kim Jones here is our wonderful host, although tonight's the only night that Kim is actually here. She's got a commitment next week and then starts teaching her own class. But Colonial is going to be hosting Dr. Marcus Warner, and I'll let you take it from there. And then just one final thing as we leave. Great turnout tonight. Appreciate you coming. Again, if there's weather, just pay attention. Go to POJKC.com or POJKC on Facebook, and I'll have updates there. If we're going to cancel, I'll try to make those decisions as early as possible. I'm driving from Lawrence. I know a number of you are driving from all over the metro. So we will make those decisions based upon safety, and we'll pray for all storms to happen on Monday, Tuesday, Friday, Saturday for the next. We made it through last year at this time of year without a single one. And then if we do miss any, we've kind of built into our schedule some time in March that we'll make those up. And then finally, just to close, feel free to invite others. As you can see, we got more room. We can spread out down here if we need to. And we want to share this joy with as many as possible. So thanks for joining us tonight, and I hope to see you next week. Blessings.